Hello, hello, and welcome to my first episode in a little while. I'm sorry I've been a bit MIA with the episodes lately, but I started a new job in January and I'm about to start another new one in a couple of days. So I've been a bit busy trying to get my head around learning all sorts of new stuff lately. So apologies for the break in the episodes and just suddenly disappearing, but you know, life happens as it does with all of us. This episode was another lovely lady who reached out to me to say thank you for everyone who's been on the podcast to share their stories because we've helped her get through her explant surgery. And she's jumped on a few weeks after having her surgery to share her story. So here is the lovely Sherry's story. And I just want to apologize for the sound quality on my end for this one. For some reason, it's picked up the wrong microphone and I sound kind of terrible. It's not all about me though, it's all about Sherry here. So enjoy the episode and I'll see you soon.
Welcome to the podcast, Sherry. How are you today?
I am fantastic, Bianca. Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you for joining me and joining me from another part of the world. So would you like to start off by telling us a bit about yourself and where you're joining us from today?
Yes, I am joining you from sunny Tampa, Florida. I am a proud wife and mom of two sons and two stepsons and two beautiful daughters-in-law.
So would you like to start off by telling us the initial reason for getting breast implants?
Yeah, sure. I actually always had a pretty good cup size and a good amount of breast tissue once I reached my developmental years. I did experience like a loss of volume after I had significant weight gain with pregnancies and then ultimately after childbirth had lost all of that weight. So I was left with that kind of the gap between the seatbelt and your bra. And then I'm also an aerial silks trapeze performer and I do a little bit of fire dancing. And so I realized it was quite challenging for me to find costumes that I could wear right off the rack and like feel confident and sexy. And I always had to sew pads or undergarments into the costumes that I was wearing. So I was very rarely able to just take a costume and rent it from the studio. I had to purchase it if I wanted to alter it. And I thought, I just would like to feel more confident and sexy. It wasn't so much like a change in my appearance as it was like convenience for me to just be able to do what I did without thinking about, you know, preparing as heavily as I had to compared to the rest of my performance troupe that was just able to take something off the rack and wear it and look beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And like breast implants can give that to you, like, you know, not promoting them or anything, but you know, you don't necessarily have to wear a bra when you have them and
right. Yeah,
they kind of hold themselves up and they fill things out like, you know, better than sometimes a natural breast would. So I can understand why you would go ahead with that.
Yeah, I probably could have just done with a lift. I did consult with many surgeons and some of them said a lift would suffice. And then others would, you know, said implants would help with that upper volume from the tissue that was lost. And so I ultimately went that direction. But ultimately, I think I could have done a lift only. So for anyone listening who's on the fence, maybe that might be the route to go.
Definitely. There's an episode I do with my younger sister and she's had a couple of kids and obviously things of her body has changed since having children. She gained and lost the weight as you did. And she, in the back of her mind, she thought maybe implants were what she'd need to do eventually. But if she ever did anything, it would probably be a lift. And that was because of me going, no, don't get implants. but yeah, like they can do so much these days. There's a surgeon here in Adelaide who does fat transfers. And I know that becoming more widely known. It was something that was available years ago, but I think the science is getting better. So yeah, definitely look into your options, I guess, is the message there.
I can definitely relate to that. You know, implants helped me to feel sexy and confident in the clothing choices, but there were a lot of things early on too that I realized that they actually didn't help me with. Like I realized that quickly after implanting, before I was symptomatic, of course, we'll get to that. I just felt like I looked a little more matronly. I was always very fit and thin and I'm small framed. So having implants made me just look large chested. And ultimately I ended up not very happy with my appearance after all of that. So I am sure many of your listeners can relate to that too.
Yeah, yeah, and me too. How did you hear about breast implant illness and what were your symptoms?
Some of my symptoms were the neurological symptoms that I was experiencing. I was getting ocular migraines and dizzy spells. When I tried to go from sitting to standing too quickly, I would get dizzy and I would have low blood pressure. My vision was very blurry. Not so much blurry like I'm losing my vision, but straining to focus. I noticed that I had a hard time bringing my eyes into focus or tracking my eyes from left to right when I was reading a book. Like they wouldn't follow me, right? So I did go to the eye doctor and got glasses, and it turns out I didn't even need them. I was getting night sweats, very irritated eyes, extreme irritability, chronic inflammation everywhere, mental cloudiness, and inability to focus. I was so forgetful and absent-minded, and I had really a lot of trouble holding the intelligent conversations and having an extreme loss of vocabulary. It was actually pointed out to me in the kindest, most friendly way by my boss. And I consider him a close friend. He knows me very well. And he's like, Sherry, I'm concerned with you. I've noticed that your vocabulary has declined and you're having a hard time like remembering what your thought process was in the middle of a sentence. Are you okay? Are you getting enough sleep? So that was obviously very apparent to others, not just myself. I did have the twitching eyelids, and it was lower eyelid on one side, upper eyelid on the other side, and it would happen at the same time. So I'm sitting here like twitching, wondering if people can see it. And
Look,
it's
most
so
of the time
annoying.
they can't, but when it's really extreme, they do. Like, I've definitely asked people, and they're like, oh,
I
yeah, I
think
can
they
hear
could just see me being all weird and perplexed, like, what's going on with me? I had twitching muscles throughout my entire body. Like my arm would twitch, my leg would twitch. I did have panic attacks when I was in very loud areas and crowded places. And as I said, I'm a circus performer. Like, I love being a performer in the center of attention, like loud, busy, bustling places. That was like what I loved. Never had a problem with that until recent years. And so I can only suspect that was that buzzing, that humming, like just too much kind of like sensory
Stimulation.
overload. Yeah. And I did end up with Bell's palsy in my face. Like my eyelid would droop, my eyebrow would droop. It would be much lower than the other side. And I had restless leg syndrome so bad. The only thing that helped me sleep, and it didn't matter if I was laying down, sitting, standing, it started in my butt and it went all the way down to my legs. And the only thing that helped me calm it was to visualize myself sawing my legs off. And so I would have that visualization of cutting my legs off and I would suddenly feel better. So, I know it's really weird, but I was just like, I just want these legs gone. I don't care. And then, of course, I had the GI issues, gallbladder, gastritis, very soft bowel movements. My stomach would bloat as soon as I ate. I had an instance where my pee was smelling like metal, like really metallic. Later turns out like I have heavy metals. I've done heavy metal toxicity testing, and I have a lot of heavy metals present in my body, so I understand why now. But my sweat was starting to smell the same as my urine. It was just very metallic, like a penny. Like it smelled like a coin. And I would get really dry mouth, really dry everything. Like my skin would flake, and I had more wrinkles than I ever did because the back of my hands were so wrinkly, and they're not anymore. So I'm so thankful for that. Like the oil in my skin has returned. That's one of the things I noticed right away is like, I have oily skin again, and I used to hate my naturally oily skin, but now I'm so grateful for that glow. And I don't care if it looks like my face is sweating. I'm just so happy to have my oily skin back. Muscular skeletal symptoms were joint pain, knee pain, wrist pain, ankle pain. I had pain in my toes and in my fingers. When I would walk, it was only my left side, but I would walk and my big toe would click, but it would be a painful click. And it wouldn't happen always, but when it did happen, it was jarring. Like to have your whole toe feel like it just came like disjointed was very odd. So my arms would feel weak. I think I already said that. No strength whatsoever. I had to quit doing my circus. I couldn't do trapeze or aerial silks. I could barely climb to the top of my silk, whereas before I could perform for hours. It was just debilitating and sad, really, to like lose the interest in something like you really love. Shoulder pain, back pain with the sciatica too, all the way down from my tailbone and all the way up to the base of my neck. I would later go do, I did a thermography scan that scans like the heat to detect the inflammation throughout your body. That was one of the areas. My entire spine was very inflamed, all the muscles around it, my colon, my intestine. So there's a lot of connection there. I had trouble sleeping through the night, and I've never had trouble sleeping. Mostly, I would wake up because my arms and my legs were like falling asleep or restless. Rheumatological issues were those present positive ANA patterns in my blood that were indicative of lupus. Metabolic and endocrine symptoms were hair loss, breakage, the weight gain, inability to lose weight despite exercising and doing all the right things. I had very low energy and severe fatigue, like things that took effort just annoyed me. My husband would be like, "Let's go for a walk." I'm like, "Oh, I don't want to." And I'm just thinking, like, who are you? Like, you love to do those things. And so just the general, like, not having enough energy to just do my regular daily functions was just so hard. I had sensitivity to cold, and I was always cold, so that was hard too, just being so sensitive to it. LDL cholesterol spike, so that goes back to gastro, and I didn't mention that earlier. My LDL cholesterol was very high, and I don't eat high cholesterol things. Like I very rarely would eat like red meat or eggs or things that would give me that LDL spike. And my liver enzymes were very high. That's a very odd one, is that my liver was just struggling to function. And my doctor was like, "Your liver like seems like it's failing, like based on your enzymes and your blood." And so that was all like connected to that gallbladder, GI, gastritis, like through and through, my whole GI tract was just in massive distress. I did have acne, and I had cystic acne under my skin, rashes all the way down my body, primarily my wrists and ankles, small red eyes, and the skin around my eyes being very red. And I also noticed just puffiness in my face. Like I lost my cheekbones, my collarbone, basically all the areas that I started to realize I was losing. That's how I knew I had the inflammation, because like I've always had a very pronounced chin, very pronounced cheekbones, but I just looked like a round, like, I don't know. I had no definition in my face. And I was like, okay, something's wrong. So on that vein, I had like all of those aging things I was telling you about with like the vanity things I noticed first. But mostly like the way that it affected me, like I didn't have thyroid issues, but it affected me as though I did. Like my periods were moving 5 or 6 days later each cycle, and I had the anxiety and the depression. The inside of my mouth was peeling. If I took my finger and I wiped it around the inside of my mouth, it would come out with skin on it. Just very odd things. And so I thought, like, if you think about a woman my age, I'm 39, experiencing like the loss of vision, people tell you when you hit 40, you're gonna need glasses. And when you hit 40, you're gonna have to start thinking about the fact that your metabolism is slowing and that your hormones are going out of whack and you might be losing testosterone. So, like, all of those things originally were just, I'm like, oh, I'm getting older, I'm reaching the age. And then I really thought about it. I'm like, I'm still in my 30s. I'm not going through menopause. I should not look like an old person. I shouldn't feel like an old person. Like, something's definitely wrong.
We're pretty close in age, and they do say, like, once you've explanted, it's like it ages you backwards because, just the way you're feeling. And like, I felt like I was, because I was 35, nearly 36 when I explanted, and I felt like I was an 80-year-old woman. So the physical feeling of feeling like my actual age again was amazing. But yeah, the skin on the back of the hands, I definitely took photos of that, and mine wasn't too bad before, but you can definitely see the difference now compared to before I had my implants taken out. Yeah, it makes such a difference to the body
And
to have them there.
you're so
Sorry.
beautiful, and you're glowing, and your skin is beautiful, and it's hard to imagine like feeling old when you look so young and vibrant. And so I'm glad you're feeling better, and I'm glad that happened for you.
Thank you. And I've had the oiliness as well. I'm a very oily person, and I didn't realize until it might have been someone else mentioning it, and I was like, "Oh, hey, I haven't been oily in a very long time." And I remember saying to my mum when I was younger, "Oh, I hate my oily skin. Like, my makeup comes off by the end of the day. I'm like whinging about, like, things aren't really that important." And mum's like, "Bianca, you age slower when you've got oily skin, like, just be okay with it." And then, yeah, when I woke up, I think it was within a few days of having the surgery, and while I was still in hospital, I noticed the oil like coming back through my forehead. I
Yes.
was like, "Oh." So, yeah, pretty instant how that can happen.
It was instantaneous for me too. It's nice to hear that you had that when you were in hospital, because I had that too. It was like the second day I had the forehead and on the side of my nose where the places that your makeup would typically just fall off you. I was noticing having to wipe that or blot that. I'm like, wait, I haven't had to do this in 4 years. It's really nice. So, yeah, I can
Hold on
relate.
to that, guys. If you're listening to this, you haven't had implants, but you've got oily skin, like, it'll keep you looking young.
Yes, I was suffering almost immediately and had no idea at the time. After getting implants, I began to gain weight. I gained 15 pounds in the first year. I guess that's about 7 kilos. And I continued to gain weight from there. The earliest things that I noticed were all of the changes to my appearance, like dry skin, wrinkly skin, small puffy eyes, things that were not necessarily like internal illness, but they were things that were affecting me, making me look older. And I was 35 at the time of having my implants, so I certainly wasn't at the age where I felt I should be aging as rapidly. And then by about 2.5 years in, I was experiencing illnesses that affected all of my body systems. The first to appear was like GI issues, and then quickly after that was neurological issues. And I had an episode that sent me to the emergency room and resulted in a 5-day hospital stay.
Wow, tell us about that. What happened?
Yeah, so I woke up and I had some GI issues. Like I had been experiencing anytime I ate food, right away, as soon as it hit my stomach, I would bloat. Like I looked pregnant and I would feel awful and I'd have to go straight to the bathroom. And that happened for about a week. And then I started to notice blood in my stool. And I told my husband, I think something is wrong. I might end up going to the hospital today. And I just tried to power through my day and I was making my son a sandwich. And while I was making the sandwich, I could not remember how to finish making a sandwich. Like my brain could not decide to put the top bread on the bottom bread. So I called my husband and said, we have to go to the hospital now.
And what did they find when you went into the hospital?
They did every scan you can imagine, CT scan, MRIs, radiology, ultrasounds to try to find the disconnect between my mental cognitive abilities and some of the stuff that was going on in my GI system. And they didn't find anything definitive, so I ended up having to go through the colonoscopy prep and colonoscopy procedure, which is terrible. And I also had an endoscopy at the same time, and they'd found like chronic gastritis, a lot of inflammation in my intestines, and thought it might be wise to remove my gallbladder. So I wasn't convinced that the gallbladder removal was the route I wanted to go. I felt like it explained only part of what was going on and didn't really explain the neurological symptoms. So I'm not just going to go ripping out organs if I didn't feel that that was 100% what was wrong with me. And I ended up on stroke protocol. They actually put me in the neurological ward and came into my room every 2 hours, making me do the test that they give stroke patients to see if I can identify simple like objects, which was really strange because as soon as I was hospitalized, I was fine. Like I felt fine. So I couldn't explain that episode, but they were obviously concerned enough to keep me for 5 days. They did all the tests and couldn't find anything. And so sent me home with a surgery date for a gallbladder removal that I ended up not doing.
Yeah, good move. I know we can survive without our gallbladder, but there's a lot of limitations that you have afterwards. One of my friend had her, she had to have hers removed. So yeah, good choice there and not just going ahead with what they'd suggested, because hopefully, as we continue on through the episode, we'll sort of find out they didn't need that by the sounds of it. Where was the sort of turning point where you found out that it would have been breast implant illness that was
Yes,
causing?
back to that. Sorry. So I would go on to experience symptoms from head to toe that affected everything, neurological, metabolical, wreaked havoc on my lymphatic system, musculoskeletal issues, endocrine issues, dermatological stuff like skin rashes and dry skin. You name it, I had it. 54 symptoms later, I just started to track my symptoms because they were not all like related to one system of my body. They were head to toe. And so in the same time, I thought, I can feel inflamed. Like from the inside out, I feel a burning in my body. And I just wanted to reduce my inflammation while I tried to solve this issue. So I began tracking my food intake, my toxic burden, my sleep habits, my exercise. I even did like the mental toughness program, 75 Hard. I'm not sure if you've heard of it,
Oh,
but
yes, I have heard people talking
I
about it.
did two cycles of it. I thought maybe I just need to toughen up. Like maybe this is normal and I'm making a big deal of it. But after seeing several doctors and it had no answers and I didn't feel any better, I decided to, this is really funny, I took all 54 of my symptoms and I copy and pasted them into Google. And I know most people are like, you should never do that, but that actually saved my life. I'm convinced that saved my life. So the first thing that came up was ASIA syndrome, ASIA, which is the autoimmune syndrome induced by adjuvants. And this is commonly caused by vaccinations, implanted medical devices such as surgical mesh. You have some experience with the IUD, dental implants, surgical clips, permanent sutures, injectable toxins like Botox and fillers, mercury fillings, and of course, breast implants. So the only thing on that list that I had were breast implants. So I decided to Google, can breast implants make you sick? And that's when I found that big Facebook group. I found a headline like the first search result on Google was breast implant illness. I read thousands of stories from women that were just as sick as me, if not more sick. And I just started to cry because I knew beyond a doubt that that was what was wrong with me. I was so relieved, actually. For 18 months, I thought I was dying. I thought I had some mysterious illness that was yet undiscovered. And knowing that it was something like my breast implants and it was fixable gave me so much relief. I was like, I am ready. Let's go get them out. I'm done. So let's fix this.
There's that moment, like I definitely cried, and I think my moment of like that emotion came from watching YouTube videos about people going through the same thing, and I was just like so upset for all of the people that go through this not knowing what's wrong with them, like as it obviously has for both of us and anyone I've had on the podcast. Like you sort of go ahead with this surgery assuming everything's going to be fine, and then you spend ages like just so unwell and thinking that some people sort of say like, I feel like I was going crazy because there was all of these things. And as you said before, all of the body systems are impacted, but then you're trying to do things to fix it. And like, it just makes me so sad that there are people that are just like, giving up because they're like giving up hope because they're like, oh, tried everything. I don't know what's wrong with me. And without finding, the breast implant illness groups and, Googling the symptoms. Like it would be so hard just to live that life going, oh, this is just me now. Like I've definitely done it. I sort of started bowing out of social things because I knew that that'd leave me too tired and, planning my weekend around if I went for a walk that was too long. I'd end up so like in so much pain for the rest of the weekend. So I've tried not plan anything else. It's just yeah, it's just really sad. I think that's why I was so upset, just because there's so many people that are living like this. That's just really not fair.
I agree with you. And after discovering breast implant illness and listening to your podcast, actually, it was one of the very first things that I found when I started to Google like outlets for it and just people sharing stories because I wanted to hear more stories. I could not get enough. I was like, this is me, that one's me. Like each part of each woman's story related to me very closely and intimately. And I believe it was your guest Heidi, that just was planning her funeral. I was like, this is so sad, but I could totally relate because I was like thinking to myself, if this doesn't get any better, like, should I prepare my family for the fact that I personally think I'm dying from the inside and I have no idea what's next? So I feel personally for those who actually do discover breast implant illness and then are powerless to fix it. I'm very fortunate that I could afford a surgery and that I could get it done, but there are many, many women out there who just can't take that step for their own health, and have to suffer for a very long time as a result. So my heart aches for them.
Definitely, it's an expensive surgery. I was lucky that mine wasn't, because I went back to my old surgeon. She's not someone who seems to need to charge a lot for her surgeries. Like my initial surgery to have my implants was covered under Medicare because mine was a deformity and we were correcting that deformity. I say that in quotation marks. I didn't pay a lot, but I know, here in Australia, surgeries can be 10,000 upwards, and that's just to have the explant. Not, a lot of people do look at having the lifts done, have a look at the fat transfers. It's a lot of money. People are withdrawing their superannuation early over here to pay for their surgery.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's a massive expense. And, you know, there's a part of me that hopes that one day we get to a point where it is covered by Medicare type systems or insurance, because you're going to keep, I don't mean to say this in a negative way, but you're going to keep being a burden on the medical system by going to multiple appointments and multiple specialists. And people quite often take themselves to the emergency room because they don't know what's causing this. Like, you know, I hope the world eventually gets to a point where it is something that is covered. But also, you know, there's a preventative side of it where I hope that there's more awareness of it, which is why, you know, I do the podcast. So that we're not then getting ourselves into that, you know, having breast implants to then be sick and become that burden on the system.
There's a lot of work to be done there on both sides, and I hope to be a small part of it. And I know you are too. So let's keep going.
That's it. Yeah, keep plugging away at it, because they'll listen to us eventually if we're loud enough. So what process did you go through to organize your surgery?
Yes, I consulted with over 10 explant surgeons, three of those being some of the top surgeons in the US, specifically those who perform only explant surgeries or wholeheartedly believe in BII. These surgeons were the ones who were not only willing to perform the en bloc technique, but also understood the importance of removing the entire tissue capsule. And so those were the ones that I was consulting. I paid a significant amount to have my consultations alone. And so I think what helped me to, like, in my process of evaluating which explant surgeon was best for me, was sticking to what was important to me. So several of the surgeons I met with had convincing arguments for why it wasn't necessary to remove the capsule, or why BII wasn't real, or why maybe exchanging my implants for new ones could help me. So in those moments, I know it's terrifying, but in those moments, some self-doubt actually did creep in. I'm not going to lie, but I decided to remain strong and, like, immediately stop the consult. I would just politely say, those things are things I'm not willing to compromise on. And you might be a fantastic surgeon, but I just don't believe you're the surgeon for me. Mm-hmm. And so that was an unfortunate part of the process. I did waste a little bit of time and a small sum of money, but to help determine if a surgeon was someone I wanted to consult with in the first place, I would just browse their website. If they didn't at least mention breast implant removal for any reason at all, even if it was cosmetic reason, I did not consult them. Because there are maybe surgeons out there who are fantastic and they perform successful explants, but if they are not willing to include this information on their website, it just tells me, like, it's my belief that they're more interested in promoting breast augmentation than they are in informing their patients. And so I immediately disqualified those surgeons, and that helped me stay the course as well.
And how did you end up making the decision to explant with your particular surgeon?
Yes. So my surgeon, it was Dr. David Rankin in Jupiter, Florida. He's an absolute expert on BII, and I believe he's like an angel in his commitment to educating the public about it. He's been, you know, television, radio, podcasts, social media platforms, just spreading the word in a quest to help others. And I actually didn't know that about him before I researched him, but he did show up to me as one of the top explant surgeons in the US. So he was very sought after. When I consulted with him, his waiting list was like 18 months long. And I know, but I believe right away that he was the surgeon for me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't keen on waiting that long, but I knew that he would be my best chance at recovering fully and with a beautiful aesthetic outcome. Like, I loved his before and after photos of his work. I knew I was going to need a lift after all that time. And he had a very caring nature, and he was doing so much to educate others. I just felt it deep in my soul that I needed to book with him. So I did book with him, and my initial surgery was scheduled for July of 2025. But he saw my list of symptoms and the fact that I had only had implants for 4 years. And because I was suffering so greatly after just 4 years, he considered my case of BII to be advanced and told me that if someone had a cancellation, I would get the next surgery. And so I just booked with him on a leap of faith, and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. And I got the call 2 days later that I was booked for 10 days after that. So, yeah. Yes, I know. I'm so grateful to God. My bag was packed. I was beyond ready. Like, I just wanted to cut these things out of me. If I could do it at home, I would have. Like, I felt completely disconnected from my breasts, almost as if they were like tumors on the outside of my body. I was so ready to get it done. But Dr. Rankin's, his bedside manner, his patience, his just his overall general being was just so relieving to me. I just knew he was the one for me.
It's really important that you feel comfortable with a surgeon. And I've followed Dr. David Rankin for a very long time, and I understand what you mean. Like, he would just make you feel so comfortable with your decision and with the outcome of the surgery. So you said that your bags are already packed. What kind of things did you do to prepare for the surgery?
Yeah, so I was fortunate that I had absolutely zero hesitation in choosing to remove my implants. I do recognize, and I want to be sensitive to this because I feel like I didn't touch on this and I probably should. I recognize that many women struggle with the decision, and it does impact their mental health to have to come to such a decision. So I feel for those women, and I'm incredibly sensitive to that. So when I say I was excited, I don't mean that in any way other than to say, like, that was my personal situation. I didn't have that struggle. Personally, you can take my beauty, but just don't mess with my brain, don't mess with my strength or my health. So I intend to live a good long life, and I intend to be here for my sons and for my family. So for me, this decision was easy. So when I say I was excited to prepare, I was excited to prepare, like mentally prepare. I read the book Killer Breasts by Diane Kaiser, and that helped me walk through like the proper protocol for and the timing for detoxification, because that's something I really knew that I wanted to do, especially because of all of my GI issues. There were other tips in there for keeping my symptoms at bay and avoiding flare-ups of inflammation while I was waiting to explant. So that was super, super helpful to me. I also read the book Let Me Get This Off My Chest by Tara Hopko. That was a great book. It detailed her struggle with her physical appearance before implant all the way through explant, and I enjoyed it very much. And of course, I listened to every single episode of your podcast. My husband and I, we listened to, my husband listened to it too. It helped me to know I wasn't alone in the journey, and it helped my husband to see, like, to understand more about BII and to hear all the other women affected by it. And they would list off their symptoms, and he'd be like, "That's you. That's you. Oh my gosh, you have that. That's you." And so that helped us a lot. And then to physically prepare, I reorganized my closet and my dresser to have like all of my clothing within a T-Rex arm's reach. And I did every piece of laundry in my house. I pre-made meals. I organized all my healthy snacks that could be like easy to grab and go. I worked ahead as much at my job. I'm a director of operations and marketing for a very fantastic real estate coaching company. We have a lot of clients in 23 states and in Canada. So I was like, I can't just take off work at the 10 days notice. So I did as much as I could to like prepare the company for my absence. I just thought of anything I could do to make the first 2 weeks of recovery easy on my spouse, on my boss, and on myself. That
It's so
preparation really
thoughtful
paid
of you
off.
to think of other people. Like, I mean, it's a big thing for us to go through, but that's beautiful of you to be thinking of your family and of your workplace.
I'm like in my just in my normal personality, I'm like preparation level 1000. So for me, it was just like the way that I am. And I have to be like, I've heard another episode of your podcast where you're talking about how you and your partner complement each other, and like one of you is prepared and the other one isn't. It's very much the life we live too. So I just knew I had to. And so I had to travel actually for about 4 hours to get my surgery done, and I had to stay in a hotel afterward for several days. So making sure that I thought about what to plan to bring with us to the hotel and also what to have once we got back home, that was well worth the effort. I would highly recommend like think fully through every aspect of your surgery.
That all of that information is going to help people, so thank you for that. Obviously, Dr. David Rankin is somebody who believes in BII, but was there anything specifically that he said when you were sort of talking about your symptoms? And then when did you end up explanting?
Yes. So what he told me, and this is something that may help others that have been incorrectly diagnosed by their doctors or suspect that they may be suffering from one illness when it's really BII. I was listing off my symptoms to Dr. Rankin, and he mentioned to me that, and also his patient coordinator, they said the same thing, like, perhaps you have low testosterone. And my primary care physician also considered maybe I had Hashimoto's. And I hear this a lot with women. And the way that Dr. Rankin and his entire team explained things to me in terms of like chronic inflammation that you have when you have like a immune when your immune system's in fight or flight, basically, is you can have enough testosterone in your blood. Like, actually, my labs came back. I have perfect testosterone levels. My thyroid levels were perfect. I didn't have, it was like baseline textbook, like the best you can possibly get. You can have T3, T4, all the free floating testosterone in your blood, but if your cells are so chronically inflamed on the outside, that testosterone cannot do its job and like enter the cell. So I was having symptoms of hypothyroidism, but I wasn't hypothyroid. So that was like something that he told me, like, I believe you're probably chronically dehydrated. I would right away start drinking coconut water. I would right away start eating things like watermelon, things that are very high in water. You're going to see that help a little bit with your inflammation. So just taking the time to understand my symptoms and like relate it to what he has seen really helped me too. Yeah, and I explanted on February 15th of this year, so that's 2024. I'm currently 5 weeks post-op and I'm feeling fantastic. I'm very happy with how things turned out and how things turned out aesthetically. I'm back to a full B or a small C, and I'm waiting for this fluffing fairy that everyone talks about, but I believe she'll come. And I get slightly discouraged when people are like, I'm 11 days post-op and the fluffing fairy made it here. And I'm just like, my time will come. So just do all the right things. But I do actually think already I look better than I can ever remember. Certainly as good as I did before I had children. When I
That's
woke
wonderful.
up from surgery, I was super clear-headed. It was great. And I took a huge deep breath, like the first deep breath I could ever remember. And I also, one thing I noticed right after surgery is that the noise in my head stopped. Like, I hadn't realized I had noise in my head until I didn't have it anymore. And I'm trying to think, like, the best way to describe it is like buzzing or humming, like just this constant sound in the background. And I can only presume that it was from all the neural inflammation that I had been experiencing, and maybe being properly hydrated and having IV bags full of vitamins and minerals kind of contributed to helping with the chronic systemic dehydration and all that cellular inflammation. However, the noise has not returned, and my mind is like super clear now. Just things that I noticed right away. I know I want to talk a little bit about the symptoms that I don't have anymore, but the things like immediately when I woke up from surgery, it was just clear head, no noise. The world was just so wide open to me.
Beautiful to hear. So did you want to talk through the symptoms that you're not experiencing anymore, the other ones you've just mentioned?
Yes, so I'm a realist more than I'm an optimist, and I had seen countless women saying that they woke up from surgery being like 100,000% better. And then I had seen the women who said, I'm 1 year post-op and I still have most of my symptoms. And so I wanted to believe that I would be one of the ones that woke up feeling really good right away, but I prepared myself mentally for being one of the ones that had to ride the struggle bus for a little while. I'm happy to say that I feel generally good overall. So my headaches are gone completely. I haven't had a headache since before explanting. The migraines, like the ocular migraines, my joint pain, my back pain, my neck pain, hip pain, all gone. My restless leg syndrome is gone. It had gotten so bad at one point that I couldn't walk. I lost my ability to walk for an entire day and a half just shortly before explanting, and so I haven't had that at all. And I can focus, like I can make it through an entire work day feeling mentally strong. My cognitive function has returned, my vocabulary's back, my ability to hold an intelligent conversation and not feel like an alien, that's all back. And so I'm just less irritable overall, less anxious, certainly not depressed. I haven't had skin rashes, I haven't had muscle weakness, muscle twitches, muscle pain, nothing. And the most exciting part for me is that my GI issues are beginning to clear up and everything is just as it should be in the bathroom department. So that was something I had been struggling with for about 18 months, and it's on its way to the correct side.
That's amazing, all after 5 weeks. And like, it's
I know.
important that you sort of mentioned there, the GI issues are still on their way to getting back to being 100%, because yeah, there will be people who are feeling amazing straight after the surgery, but there are some things that do take time. And
Yes.
there's all of that sort of, I guess, cellular regeneration. I'm not qualified to talk about that specifically, but those kind of things that would be slowly making their way back, so that you are like eventually feeling well. So yeah, that's really awesome to hear.
Yeah, I did change primary care physicians throughout the process of when I started feeling my symptoms to just before explanting. And my current primary doctor actually didn't even believe in BII. She didn't deny its existence, but like any traditional medicine doctor, they're trained to like only deal with facts and only deal with proof. And so I thought, well, it's a start that she doesn't completely discredit it. So let's just see if we can work together. And so when I discussed my list of symptoms with her, she had examined me on the beginning of February of this year. So like 2 weeks before implant or explant, sorry. It's the very first time I'd ever met her because I had switched from that one that wanted me to rip the gallbladder out. And she could tell that I was sick. She could tell, she saw my hair loss patterns. She saw that my eyebrows were thinning. She saw my skin color and my rashes and that I was just generally in pain. And initially, she's the one who had suspected Hashimoto's. She also just thought maybe like lupus or Sjogren's or one of the more common autoimmune disorders that women with BII are suspected to have. And so we ordered the full workup, the thyroid panel, the blood panel, stool specimens, brain MRI, diagnostic mammogram, a breast ultrasound to check for a rupture. She tested everything, and everything came back fine. I did have a little bit of a positive ANA pattern in my blood, which is like indicative of a autoimmune disorder similar to lupus, but I didn't have some of the things present that would diagnose me full blown. So we'd have to further test that. But she gave me 3 weeks to complete all those tests. And then she told me, come back in 3 weeks and we'll evaluate them together. And then in that process, I got the call from Dr. Rankin, expedited my explant, had the explant, and then 5 days post-op, met with her for my 3 week follow-up. She couldn't believe it when she saw me. She didn't even know I had had surgery, and she was like, oh my goodness, you look fantastic. And I wasn't even wearing makeup that day. I hadn't done my hair because I was like 5 days post-op, and she's like, what are you doing? And I told her about it, and now she fully believes that there is a connection. Fully believes there's a connection. So she told me she's committed to helping me. We're going to do another full blood panel at 3 months post-op. She's actually gone as far as changing the question on her intake form for new patients and asking, do you currently have medically implanted devices? Which I think is phenomenal. She's like on the crusade with me, and I'm super grateful for her help. So,
That's really good. We need more doctors like that, please.
yes.
Allied health professionals, physiotherapists, OTs, podiatrists, because the inflammation that breast implants cause can then cause the things that we're going to those allied health professionals about. That's amazing. Like, you've made a difference already, just by the evidence of you having the surgery and how well you look after having it. That's so good.
She could just tell, like she could tell. And I have several health practitioners that are friends of mine. There's a naturopath here in my town. There's a wellness professional, and then I have a mental health professional that have all said we commit to adding that to our form. We see firsthand like how great you look, how you're feeling. One of the mental health professional actually met with me as a consult, and I was just a puddle of tears because I was like depressed and anxious and feeling so horrible and didn't know what was wrong with me. And then here I am just 5 weeks later, and I'm like, I have not a care in the world. I mean, I know that sounds a little frivolous, but like things are able to roll off my shoulders, whereas before they were not. Like everything stressed me out. So he can see that too. And I just think if we can get more health professionals not to admit that BII is real, it's not, you're not committing to that, but you're just asking. Like you're asking about medically implanted devices. It's super important.
And you're asking about them in general, not just breast implants, because I have had surgical mesh after having a surgery to have my ovary removed. It had latched onto the outside of my bowel, and it's sort of around the time of that surgery that my hair loss was really bad. And I wonder whether, because I think it was dissolvable. I can't actually find much information at all on that particular kind of mesh, but there was one thing that said that it was dissolvable. But obviously, while that was happening, my body was really struggling with it. So yeah, any kind of medically implanted device can obviously have that impact on the immune system. So, yeah, that's really a really important question for them to be adding. That's so good. What was the recovery like from the surgery for you? You did mention like you were preparing to have T-Rex arms. What was it all like for you?
Yes, yeah, so I did have T-Rex arms. I was told not to use my arms, not to drive for 2 whole weeks. I did have drains for 6 days, and that process was okay. Like, it wasn't glamorous at all, and it was a bit tricky to shower and to measure the output and wonder if I'm like, if it's healing okay. But it was 6 days, but it's a distant memory now. It was a short, very short 6 days. By end of week one, I felt like I could climb Mount Everest. I had so much energy. I wasn't in any pain. In fact, I never took pain medication at all in any of my recovery. My surgeon did offer me a nerve block that does last up to 72 hours. So I did opt for this, and I believe that it contributed to how well I felt overall without needing pain medication. But I was moving my arms and using my arms by 2.5 to 3 weeks post-op. And I still haven't tried to lift anything heavy. I love lifting weights. I love kickboxing and punching a bag, but I haven't done any of that. And I've only returned to walking so far. And I do a few miles, but I'm kind of like, I can't say nervous to return to exercise, but I know myself and like the way that I exercise is really hard. Like I go all out and I don't think I could like take a step back from exercise. So I'm just walking for now, but I'm looking forward to returning to like riding my stationary bike and doing more aerobic type exercises with weightlifting all after week six. So I have like about a week and I'll start doing the weightlifting. But overall, my recovery was much smoother than getting my implants. So that alone just surprised me. It was so much easier this time around.
That's really good. Now, yours was quite a unique case. Tell us about what Dr. Rankin found in your capsule.
Yes, so imagine waking up from surgery, and the biggest worry you have is like, is the anesthesia going to make me really sick and groggy, or am I going to say something stupid while I'm under anesthesia? And your partner says, they found something. So I'm groggy and I'm coming to, and I can like, I'm very clear-headed, but I'm also like, oh, what just happened? And he says, they found something. And so my fear all along was that I had some sort of cancer, whether it be the BIA-ALCL. My breast implants were silicone, not saline, and they weren't textured, they were smooth. So I knew like the chances of that were very low. Dr. Rankin and I discussed that. He told me that he would send everything out for pathology if he believed that there was a concern, and he hadn't. So I was like, what could it be? And then they bring in the specimen cup with this very sharp, triangular piece of, I can't tell if it's plastic or if it's calcified, like, I don't know. It's not part of my body. It's definitely like a foreign object is what they called it, unidentified foreign object. And I have it in a little specimen cup, and I'll shake it in front of my microphone and see if your listeners can hear it. So that thing was inside of my left breast tissue capsule. It was free floating around between the implant and the capsule itself, and it was, Dr. Rankin believes it was banging on a nerve. Like the sharp, pointy side of it was just hitting a nerve every so often, because I told him even before explanting, before I knew, I never ended up going for that breast ultrasound or the diagnostic mammogram that my PCP ordered, because I had the explant surgery quickly rush up on me. So sure, it probably could have been detected in that scan, but I didn't have the fortunate side of like having that done. So this was all news to me, and I had told Dr. Rankin at my pre-op appointment. He's like, what side is most of your pain on? And like, it's the left side. I get Bell's palsy. I get the extreme pain, like shoulder and back, and I just can't explain it. And I had tightness of my chest and heart palpitations, and multiple times per month, I felt like I was having a heart attack. And I was trying to explain to him like where it started, and that it was an acute pain, and that it didn't go away, and that it would take my breath away. And so he's like, I'd be interested in what we're gonna find. And so thinking back to like him saying that, I'm like, Well, you did find something. So you put that into the universe, but it was actually my tissue capsules had extended very far laterally. He told me that because I had this foreign object in my tissue capsule, my capsule tried to also encapsulate the thing. So they went like almost under my armpit. So he had to really get in there to like remove the capsule. Yeah. So some tenderness and soreness on that side, but he was successful in removing everything. And we firmly believe that that was an object left behind during my implantation surgery.
That is, like, I just can't believe that. How big would you say the object is?
It's about an inch and a half. It
Oh.
is triangular, so at the widest part, it's an inch and a half by
Yeah.
probably about an inch, whatever that is in metric.
About 2.5 centimeters metric, I think. Two, I'm not 100, 2.54 centimeters, I think, something like that. So
We'll
yeah,
do some conversion. It's
that's
large.
big for something to be like in your boobs. It's big to
Yes.
be anywhere in your body, but far out. And just judging by the noise, you can hear how hard it is. And to me, it sounds like it's thick as well. Like it's not just a tiny little shard of something. It's quite thick. So, oh, like you
Yes.
poor thing. And that would have been so concerning.
I will say if you wanted to check it out, Dr. Rankin on his Instagram page has a video of it from the operating room. So he also has pictures of it in one of his posts. It would have been from February of 2024, but it is, he's holding it and he had just found it in this video and he has like his surgical gloves on and he's flicking it back and forth to see like how thick it is and how it sounds. And you can clearly hear it and see it while he's flicking it, like how thick this thing really is. It's so crazy.
I had seen it. So Sherry had messaged me on the Facebook page that I've got just to like explain that she'd listened to the podcast and had the surgery and mentioned that that foreign object had been found. And the next time I jumped on Instagram, Dr. David Rankin's post about that object came up. I'm like, oh, like I'm putting this together. Like that's when I realized it was him that you'd had the surgery with. And yeah, so check that out. I will. When we post this episode, I'll also share that video on the Instagram just so that people can see what it was, because I can't believe that that's happened to you. Like that, yeah, I don't know what circumstances could have happened to for that to end up in there, but should not,
Yeah.
absolutely should not have happened.
No, we are quite frustrated and frightened by it and still speculating on its what it could be. We think we know, we just can't say. And all of that to say, like, my immune system was already fighting something, right? My immune system is trying to fight off these implants, trying to fight off the capsule that's surrounding it, and now it has like another thing. And so it was really the perfect storm. You know, you can stack a brick on another brick and a brick on top of that brick and a brick on top of that brick and it might not fall, but there's going to be a point where you stack one more thing on top and the whole thing comes crumbling down. And I just kind of feel like that was my health. Like I didn't realize I had an extra implanted device inside of me that my immune system was fighting. And so I have no doubt that that contributed to just the overall horrible way that I felt and many of those symptoms.
So have you made any other sort of lifestyle changes since explanting?
I've made a lot of them. I actually made several of them before explanting, just to try to reduce the inflammation that was happening in my body, even before I knew about BII, because I was convinced I had chronic inflammation before I actually even knew what was causing it. So I went gluten-free and dairy-free and soy-free and sugar-free and alcohol-free and caffeine-free. So I was basically like living a lettuce and grilled chicken life.
Yeah.
So, I also stopped using any cosmetics and then gradually graduated to all natural cosmetics once I found a brand and a line that I enjoyed. I stopped getting gel manicures, gel pedicures. I stopped coloring my hair, all in an attempt to decrease my toxic burden. I use a natural rock deodorant, and I've actually had a lot of success with that. I know a lot of people say you're going to stink for 2 months if you switch from regular aluminum antiperspirant to the rock, but I did not. I had immediate success with that. I'm happy to share the brand that I use with anyone who might be interested. But I also started using all natural cleaning products, like wherever possible. Shower soaps, shampoos, detergents, laundry, dish soaps. I drink distilled unfiltered water whenever possible. I even tried to like aim for 7 hours of sleep per night. some form of daily exercise every single day, even if it's just a walk or some yoga. And I try to do several quiet moments of mindfulness per day. So I realize we live in a very toxic world, especially in the United States. Like we're toxic. So it's less about like the pressure you put on yourself. Like I don't live in a bubble. It's moderation. There are some days where I have to drink out of a plastic bottle, or there are days where I can only drink tap water, and it's okay. As long as I do as much as I can to decrease my toxic burden, I still feel like I'm doing more for my body than I was if I'm just not paying attention to everything I'm putting in it or on it.
It's really common, I think, for anyone who's gone through this surgery to make that change. I've done the same. I've sort of tried to move away from cleaning products with lots of chemicals in them. I do, where I can use the natural stuff, I will. Sometimes you do need to jump in with some bleach if you've got a bit of mold happening in your bathroom. Like, there is still that moment where you, occasionally need to use those things that we try to avoid, but it's balance. You're sort of having less of a toxic load on your life if you're using that kind of stuff less frequently. So I've definitely delved down that rabbit hole as well. So many people I've spoken to have, and like I think we can't completely avoid, you walk outside and you inhale that kind of stuff anyway, just because there's, exhaust streams from cars and that kind of thing. But if you can take those little steps where possible, then your body's going to thank you for it. Now, would you say that there's anything that you wish you knew about breast implants before having them?
I certainly do.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got my implants, I knew about like the potential more common risks, right? I knew about rupture. I knew about capsular contracture. I knew that having implants could make detection of cancer a little more difficult, and that it probably would mean diagnostic mammograms and ultrasounds instead of regular traditional mammograms. Like I said, I was 35 when I got my implants. I had not yet even had to worry about a mammogram, so I'm thinking that's so far off in the future. The type of implants I had were the Mentor silicone memory gel, otherwise referred to as gummy bear implants. And because that silicone gel is more cohesive, if it were to rupture, my surgeon said it is believed that it would happen at a much slower rate and it wouldn't leak so quickly into my body cavity. So I really wasn't worried about rupture at all. I was told that that type of implant like really had a significant, really decreased rate of rupture. The things I didn't realize is that they aren't meant to last forever. My surgeon never told me this, Bianca. Never. In fact, the surgeons that I consulted for my breast augmentation, I probably met with five or six surgeons. I didn't know that it was recommended to replace them every 8 to 10 years. I did not realize I'd be signing up for a surgery that often, and I probably never would have explored that route because it's not something that I ever thought. So I was really surprised when I started listening to stories and like your podcast and saying like it's recommended, and then I did research and I'm like, wow, it is. He never said that. And then also at the time I was getting implants, there was older research about the connectivity between breast implants and autoimmune disorders just resurfacing from like the 90s and then again in the early 2000s. And all of the wording on this, like the stuff that was resurfacing on the surgeon side of the table was very vague, and it downplayed the significance of these studies just in general. Like many of the surgeons, including my own, never went over any of this with me. But I did find it buried in paperwork later, like the consent forms and the things that you sign. I found a random thing. So like immune symptoms, not immune disorders, immune symptoms. And the verbiage was like, in extremely rare cases, or patients claim that, or suspected disorders. It wasn't like cases reported, studies have shown and proven. It was all this like, discrediting reports and unfounded or diminishing the severity of the research. And in my opinion, when you're doing that, you're lying by omission. Like you're choosing not to tell someone that. So I guess I just wish I had more information. There's so much more information today than there was even 4 years ago when I was consulting implant surgeons. And I'm committed to helping educate people and healthcare providers because I really would have probably still got my implants. Not going to lie. But I would have known as soon as I started losing my hair or getting the dry skin or having the GI issues that, like, oh, wait, someone told me this might happen. I'm one of those unlucky people that had this happen. Let me go ahead. I know what I need to do. And it would have saved me 3 years of illness and debilitating, So that's what I wish I knew. I wish I knew how toxic breast implants really are. I innately know that silicone itself cannot be good to ingest or to eat or to come into direct contact with. Yet, so many of the textiles in our world are made of silicone. Like, there are silicone byproducts in some of the food we eat and cooking sprays. There's food safe silicone cookware and drinkware. There's a lot of things that are made of silicone. And then it's reasonable to me that the average person can become misguided about the dangers of breast implants because every type of breast implant, whether saline or silicone, is made of silicone. And saline implants do still have the silicone outer shell. So even though everything is deemed safe by the FDA or your regulatory there in Australia, there aren't enough studies to show how silicone can break down in our bodies, especially at our body temperature, over a prolonged period of time. And that's also something that never occurred to me. I never thought, like, okay, the human body is a miraculous thing and it does a lot to protect itself. And is it just going to degrade these things over time? So I didn't even realize that silicone can leach into our bodies without the presence of a rupture. That was new to me. Just so on and so forth, things like that. I wish I had known. I hope for more strict mandates on surgeons practicing informed consent with their patients, but who knows how long it'll take to get us there. I just hope it's sooner rather than later.
Did you know at the time of having your breast implants put in about the ban on silicone breast implants that happened in the US all those years
I
ago?
did not. I didn't. And you know what? I think that ban was 2019, and I had my implants in 2020. And I'm so upset about it because, like I said, I may have, if I knew I could get like an immune symptom, not disorder, full-blown word disorder might have changed things for me. Maybe not. I don't know. I couldn't say. But if I knew I would start to get some symptoms, I probably still would have done it. If you told me these are banned, there's like a black box warning. It's the same as a surgeon general putting the black box on cigarettes. Like, these are bad for you. I would have walked away. Like, drop it all, give me my $15,000 back, goodbye. But I just unfortunately did not know.
And I've only found out because it's been months and months of putting it together, but I'm slowly putting together an episode on the history of breast implants, and that's how I found out about the ban on silicone implants in the US. And from what I remember, it's been a little while since I've been sort of putting that research together, but the sample size that they used when they were putting the case together to reintroduce silicone implants was not, it wasn't enough. It was quite a small group of women that were being reviewed. And I think it was Amanda who I've had on the episode before, the holistic beauty coach. She had silicone implants put in after the ban was lifted. And she was told by the manufacturer that she would be reviewed regularly by them to check the durability and how she's feeling after the implants, and that follow-up never happened. So, they're like, yes, we'll do this if you introduce silicone implants back into the world, but they never actually did what they promised. So yeah,
Gosh.
that's really upsetting. And the fact that
I
it's not
remember,
more widely about.
you're so right. I remember Amanda's story and love her, by the way. I follow her on Instagram. She's so like life-giving. She breathes life into everyone. I agree with that. Like, how's the best way to say this without my frustration coming to a head here? My surgeon, I feel like, again, it's back to that lying by omission. Like, I actually asked because I was confused when I went on my consult and found out that I could get silicone implants. Because when I was younger, like in the 90s or the early 2000s, when they were banned, I did know about that ban way back when. I thought they were banned forever. So I thought my only option was going to be saline. And then so when I went and met with him and he's like, no, silicone's the way. I said, I thought you couldn't do that. He's like, oh no, totally fine. The FDA brought it back. It's wonderful. Like, but I was never told black box warning. I was told these are safer. They're new and improved. you can cut them open and they won't leak into your body. So
Drive over them with a truck.
I can't believe that. Like, you can slam them with a door. You can, what?
Against a wall. You hear about
Right.
all of that, but back to what you were saying before, like I don't think they're tested against body temperature, let alone like a lot of us, including me, use saunas to try and feel better from those symptoms, like the muscle aches and the joint pain. I was like, oh, go into a sauna. Like probably
Yes.
melting my implants while I'm in there. Who knows?
Absolutely. Saunas, tanning beds, just being out in the sun. It's on a hot summer day here in Florida, it can reach 100 degrees. Like, what did that do to the inside of my body? I just don't know.
Heidi used to say, like, she's in Arizona, which I think gets warmer than
Does.
Florida.
Yeah, it
And
does.
she said summer was really, really hard on her body. Like she'd feel more sick when she had
Right.
implants during summer because of the fact that it was just moving things around more, I think. So yeah. Oh, just it just I don't like I can't help myself but to think about it, but I also don't want to think about like what was going on in my body because the summer's here in Adelaide. I'm going to Google the Fahrenheit. So the other day it's reaching autumn Celsius, but we've sort of had like a summer has hit a bit later. So the other weekend it was 111 degrees at the
Wow.
start of autumn in Adelaide where I'm from. So like our summers can get to that sometimes for a whole week. And just sit at that temperature. We don't get the humidity
It's
where I live, but oh, like just imagine the horrible
sure, like
shock.
the silicone gel and all the toxins and the heavy metals in there. It's like when you heat something, when you heat butter in a pan and it returns to its liquid state. I can only imagine that that's what everything inside of our bodies are doing. So leaching and getting into our lymph nodes and finding silicone in the lymphs in your armpits, like that's very common for women, and I can only imagine that's why.
Absolutely. And thank goodness for as gross as it is to look at, but thank goodness for the capsule because it's obviously our body's way of trying to protect us from that happening. Can't always happen. I don't know how soon it starts forming, but your body's sort of doing everything it can to protect you. So I guess thanks, even though they're
Our
really
bodies
big.
know. Our bodies know and our minds don't.
That's true. That's so true. If there was one piece of advice that you could go back and give to yourself, like, in your early 30s before you were considering breast implants, what would you say?
Yeah, I've heard you ask this before on your podcast, and I often think, like, what would I tell myself? So, maybe not in my 30s, but in my earlier years, I realize how stubborn I was. I used to be a hard-headed, like, you can't tell me anything I don't already know type of person. But like I said, I wasn't terribly young when I got my breast implants. And looking back, I wish I had understood the deep connection between our mental health and our physical health. Like, our minds and our bodies are so intricately linked. And it was something like I didn't fully understand at the time. But I think if I were to tell myself at any age something, it's life is a series of ups and downs, and there's going to be times where your clothes fit just right, and then there's going to be times where your pants are too tight, and you're going to have flattering swimsuits, and you're going to have swimsuits that aren't so flattering, and people will have opinions on your appearance and think you're extraordinarily beautiful, or people will see all of your imperfections and point them out as flaws. So amidst all of that, the only thing that has mattered up until now is the life that I'm living between those moments. And I can't get that time back, but I sure as heck can try to do all the living I can now. And learning to accept myself and how I speak to myself is like paramount in my emotional well-being. And I'm really trying to tap into that. So I suppose the general overarching message to my younger self would be, you're driven and you work hard. And if you want something, make it happen for yourself, just not at the cost of your close relationships or your health. Protect those always.
That's such a good message. Thank you. So, one final question. Where can our listeners follow along with your story?
The majority of what I'm sharing right now is on my Instagram. So my Instagram handle is at Sherry in the Air. That is Sherry underscore in underscore the underscore air. I know I have the most impossible Instagram handle, hence my circus performance. So hopefully Sherry will be back in the air soon and you can see more videos of my aerial and trapeze and not just so many videos of me holding up my breast implants.
Beautiful. I'll tag you in the show notes of this episode and also on the Instagram. So thank you so much for spending your Friday night with me, Saturday morning here in Adelaide. Really appreciate everything that you've shared today. You're going to be helping people, just purely by sharing your story and sharing on your Instagram as well. So yeah, it's been great to have you on the show, Sherry.
It's been great to be here. I hope this story helps someone the same way that other stories of all the brave warrior women have helped me. So thanks for all you're doing. And you should actually start your podcast from now on with people in the US saying greetings from the future on your Saturday morning.
Absolutely, I'll start that from the next one. Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you. This podcast shares my own experience and research. I'm not a medical or health professional. You can find me on Instagram at couldit_be_ii_podcast. Thank you to my incredibly talented partner, Jacob Tengdahl, for the intro and outro music. All recording, editing, and artwork is done by me. Thank you for listening.